This Get Made. Hey, everybody. Welcome to a mini episode of How Did This Get Made? I'm your host, Paul Scheer, joining you, as always, to tell you everything that you might have missed from last week's film, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 2, The Secret of the Ooze, and everything that you need to know for next week's film, which is a real doozy, if you will. And by the way, they're always a doozies, aren't they? I'm actually very excited about next week's film. But before we get into that, want to let you guys know, if you're in Southern California and you want to come see us, we are doing shows in San Diego. I know our LA shows are sold out, but we'll be at the House of Blues in San Diego. This is big news. On August 1st. That's a Saturday night. House of Blues, August 1st, San Diego. Come down from La Jolla. Come up from Mexico. Come way down from LA. It's only 2 hours. We're going to have a good show. It's going to be a good time. House of Blues, 8-1. Come see us. Tickets are not yet on sale, but when you're listening to this, they might be. So there's that. Also, if you're a comic book fan, I wrote a comic book that I co-wrote with my buddy Nick Giovanetti. Came out this week. Guardians Team Up number 7. Drax and Ant-Man in kind of like a Red Heat kind of adventure through Miami. I think you'll like it. And if you are a nerd, or you're just a fan of Comic-Con, I will be there next week. I'll do a signing of that comic book around 5 o'clock next Saturday. And I'll be hosting a panel for Carlton Cuse's new USA show starring Josh Holloway called Colony at noon at one of the theaters. You can kind of find it out. But I'll be down there. Hope to see you down there. I won't wear a mask. I'm not going to be like a fucking jerk. I'm there to hang out. Have a good time. Here's the deal, people. The year was 1984. Michael Crichton was king shit. And they said, hey, Michael, why don't you write and direct a movie based on your own book? And he's like, fuck yeah, I'm in. Let me make Runaway. Wait, what's Runaway? Oh, it's about a police officer who hunts down killer robots. Like Blade Runner, but totally different. really different. One of the ways it's different, Gene Simmons is the bad guy. Yeah, and Kirstie Alley's in it too. Take a listen to the trailer.
It is the future. Mysteriously spreading across an unsuspecting city, machines trained to serve humans are turning against them.
What are you got, Jerry?
Model 912 cut up two people inside the house.
I'm going in.
You're going in? We can send a disarm robot in.
If it hit the floater, it'll hit the disarm, and any minute it's going to decide to hit the kid.
An ingenious conspiracy has begun, and someone has to stop the madman who started it all.
We've got a non-standard chip here. You can turn any domestic computer into a killing machine.
Working late at night all by yourself?
I just had a few things to finish up.
No,
no big deal.
I insist. Let me help you.
No.
Bug detected.
A lot of bugs, Jackie. I thought I was queen.
Luther really wants to keep track of you. Why's that, Jackie? This is a bad guy.
He's killed 5 so far. I want him.
I'm telling you, I can't go out there. I can't go out!
You heard of a bullet that has your name on it? This isn't a runaway. This is murder.
We're never gonna make it through this one.
Runaway. Tom Selleck, Cynthia Rhodes, Gene Simmons. Runaway from TriStar Pictures.
Oh, this movie is awesome. Cops hunting robots. So like 1984 sexy. It's not like, it's like the bras and underwear were so big. This movie is ridiculous. Basically, Tom Selleck is afraid of heights and spiders. And guess what? This movie has got, I don't want to spoil it, but robot spiders. And there's a scene with some crazy heights. So definitely check that out. It's available, I know, on Apple iTunes. You can also find out where to get it in your local video store. Maybe get that on VHS or Laserdisc. You probably pop that in your old Betamax machine and just fire it up and watch away. So next week we will be talking about Runaway. And by the way, if you are you know, like, when's the next episode coming out? I'm guessing it's going to be delayed. I'm sorry, but I'm giving you proper notice. It's most likely going to be delayed. So I apologize for that in advance. We're going to get it out to you as soon as we can. Now, I'm really excited about this. One of our sister shows on Wolf Pop, called I Was There Too, hosted by Matt Gourley, interviews actors who have been in iconic films. Now, a few weeks ago, he interviewed someone that was in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I wanted to play this clip for you to get an understanding of what actually was going on behind the scenes, and also to let you know you should listen to the show. It's really good. Take a listen.
Sure. So you're Raphael, who's, you know, you're the bad boy, you're the brooder, the tough guy. What do you think got you that role as opposed to one of the other turtles?
Well, I grew up in the East Village in New York City.
You had a bit of a chip on your shoulder already?
Kind of. I mean, it was just a very tough neighborhood. Uh-huh. And I had to, you know, being kind of a scrawny kid, had to make myself at times walk bigger and tougher than I actually was so that I wouldn't get perpetually mugged. And really, until I was 13, I got mugged all the time.
You're kidding.
Yeah, until I actually started doing martial arts. And then nobody ever bothered me, and I never used martial arts, but that ended that.
Why? Because you just carried yourself in a way
I carried myself differently. Prior to that, I must have just been, you know, hey, mug me. Yeah, I just had it increased my awareness of my environment. We would spar in the dark, so it really trained all of us to become really aware of our environment. And I think just having that awareness, that's all I can assume. Having that awareness, you know, I could feel when people were around me.
Did you ever have any particularly violent muggings, or were they just your run of the mill?
No, they were. A lot of it was I went to this hippie school called the Little Red Schoolhouse, and there was the mafia kids, and they went to Our Lady of Pompeii.
Oh my God!
Which
these
was
names.
Like right down the street, and they would just. They would just kind of terrorize us, and it wasn't like it never got really bloody, but it was. They would kind of, you know, circle us and kind of play catch with us, like push us back and forth.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it was just kids terrorizing each other.
Yeah,
but it was just, you know, at times it was absolutely terrifying, and other times it was like, okay, you know, I know this will be over in about 12 minutes. You know, they'll get bored.
Well, this goes a long way.
What if I started weeping right now and had like a total meltdown?
There's something about that if the guy that played Raphael just starts weeping.
Right.
I think I would be open to that.
Okay.
I have to tell you.
I'll be open to all my emotions.
Please, I don't consider myself the Barbara Walters of podcasts, but if you wish to cry, I'm ready to take on that mantle.
Let me just be open to it.
Please.
And
please,
you know,
we won't force it.
Okay.
It's so awesome. Okay, let's get on with the show. Let's go back to the past and talk about all the things that we didn't bring up, that we brought up wrongly. It's now time for corrections and omissions. Hit the theme!
Got shit wrong, I left shit out, it's corrections and omissions.
Corrections and omissions, a chance for you to tell us we fucked up, or conversely, prove to us that you are smarter than us, which you are, because, man, these corrections and omissions are really good. I'm going to start off with the perfectly titled Fister Roboto. Basically gets into this point. He wants to expand a bit on Jason's question about the foot and if they were named that because of the hand in Marvel. Basically, the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic was a parody of some of the grittier comics of the early 80s, specifically Frank Miller's Ronin and his run on Daredevil. There are a lot of weird noir-style monologues poking fun at Miller's writing style. So yes, the hand became the foot, but the other big borrow from Splinter is that he is the master that trained his young vigilantes to harness their fighting skills, just like Stick trained Matt Murdock, who eventually became Daredevil. Stick, Splinter, yeah. And now Cameron H. also chimes in and goes, yeah, not to mention that Matt Murdock has a cameo in the first issue of Ninja Turtles. And if you actually go on to the How Did This Get Made message boards, you can actually see Matt Murdock in the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic, and it's actually pretty cool. So I don't want to spoil for you. Take a look at that. Thank you, Cameron H. Thank you, Fister Roboto. I think that's the first time anyone said thank you, Fister Roboto. Also, this is another good point here. I can't believe I made an account specifically to answer this one point. And this is, of course, Mark with a Q saying this. He goes, but as a staunch defender of this movie, I have to point out the reason that Splinter has an Asian accent is because as a rat, he was from Japan. Mark just gave us a facial. And also he writes, let's also be nice about Kino. Ernie Reyes Jr. is going through a lot right now. And a lot of Filipino-Americans like myself think that Kino was the shit next to Rufio, naturally. Dude, Mark, I hear you about Splinter. I get it. But I really want you to know that we recorded this episode long before Ernie Reyes Jr. had the kidney trouble. So I don't want you to think we were kicking a man while he was down. We don't do that on this show. We only kick people who are up. All right, Cameron H. chimes in, as always. Basically, he goes, he has an issue with Donatello. He goes, he evidently can't come up with a single synonym to say something is excellent. Perestroika? Acapella? Frerejaka? What the shit is he even trying to say? I mean, I guess it's nice that he seems to know a few polysyllabic words, but parroting them without a true understanding of their definition shows a marked lack of perspicacity. I'm going to get perception, really. There you go. So suck on that, Donatello. Cameron H. Actually hypothesizes that Donatello could have used a little bit more time in that ooze when he was initially exposed so he could actually make some better comments. Plan B from Outer Space writes, here we go, that based on the timeline of the film, he would say that on the headline of the paper, it would say, Ninja Rap is born, and then below it, there would be an article that says, Gulf War ends. Yeah, I guess, you know, some days the Gulf War ending is not as good as Ninja Rap, because, you know, Ninja Rap is kind of really defined us as a society and culture in America more than any Gulf War. I mean, gosh, I don't even remember the last time we were in war with the Middle East. John Paul Sarcasm writes, literally the best part of this movie is in the beginning when Kato, I think he means Kino, is calling the police. He goes, hurry up, there's a ton of these guys. Okay, bye. We should end all of our 911 calls that way. Okay, bye. And he also mentions that he made a best of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 3-minute reel. So he has all the best scenes there. You can go check it out. It'll be on our Twitter page, but you can also check it out on our How Did This Get Made forum. All right. Wow, we got a lot of different things in here. Roy Platt or Rue Platt writes, why does the foot go back into the laboratory? They already got the ooze. Why go back? All right, were they just going to go there and just like go to the turtles and be like, hey, turtles, look what we got. Now we'll fight for a bit and disappear off into a puff of smoke? Yeah. Well, I guess we can also say the foot never really seemed that smart. I mean, yeah, they would go. Makes no sense. I mean, it's already said. I don't need to go on that more. Fister Roboto comes back and says, I've been holding off on dropping this knowledge in the mini episode thread, but now the episode is out, so everyone knows and loves the Ninja Rap, and the time has come. So, Vanilla Ice, not Ice T as Paul calls him once during the episode. I'm sorry. Ninja Rap was the big thing to come out of this movie. But the previous year, that's right, these movies were only a year apart, there was a song from the first movie that made its way all the way to number 13 on the Billboard Top 100 and number 1 on the UK singles chart. It was called Turtle Power by the rap duo Partners in Crime, K-R-Y-M-E. Much like Deepest Bluest, it basically tells the plot of the first movie. Well, after that song, the group never really hit it big again. But the last thing they did before splitting up was a record cover of a Donna Summer song called Love to Love You. But so what, right? Some rap duo released two songs, and one of them was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. Who gives a shit? I hear you. But here's the thing. Their song, Love to Love You, was recorded for a little vehicle, cool as ice. That's right. That's a pretty fucking crazy. You know what? Fister Roboto, that is awesome. That's a great little inside fact. That's a little knowledge nugget. knowledge dump. Taylor Ann Photo, becoming the next Cameron H., I might add, she writes this, for the real corrections and omissions, this is what I got. Does Donnie use a pool stick as his weapon? I mean, he's just got this stick that he's like chalking at the end of every time he's about to get into the fight. I mean, I think he did it like 3 times. I mean, we already know that he doesn't even use it, so why does he even bother chalking the end? It's not a pool game. Great point. She goes on to say, Shredder just lets them stand there while they give Toka and Razor donuts. Him and his entire gang just stand there the whole time. Kill them! They are right there, and all of your ninjas are just watching a donut exchange? And then she continues and goes, so are we to believe that this final battle was the breakdance fight? Because they never actually touch Shredder once, and they even try to fucking talk to him. Their nemesis has just evolved into a super Shredder, and they want to fucking talk to him? Y'all, this movie makes me so mad. And then instead of just going ahead and fighting him, they're like, wait, we're turtles. And then they go into the water. And then when they come back up, they're coughing and act like they don't and can't breathe underwater. So which is it? Can they go into water or can they not? Well, Taylor Ann brought up some very strong points here. Not to be outdone, Cambert, two words, like Q-Bert, but different, brings up a very important point. Goes like this. Throughout the movie, characters meet and interact with the turtles, and their reactions are never consistent to seemingly non-existent. The robbers? Nothing. No double takes or confusion to be had. Then we get down to the clown scene, and Donatello leaves the fight, finds his clown, comes up with a gag to take one guy out. He sits and waits, pretending to be a giant inflatable toy turtle or something, until the robber comes by. And now, these guys have been fighting these giant turtle men for a little while, and the robber's first thought is, hey, that's a giant turtle toy? It's not like, hey, that looks like the people we've been fighting? Then when Donatello comes to life, the robber flees in terror. Was he scared because he thought a toy that looks like the people that they've been fighting just came to life? Or because it was a mutant turtle, which he's already seen his co-robbers fighting? Good point. I don't know. Cambert goes on to bring up the point that the clubgoers in Vanilla Ice are initially shocked a little, and then when they just assume that they're all in costumes, they accept it without a problem. Not one person flees in terror. They just simply back up in terror. Then they quickly ignore it all and accept it as normal. You think that more people would be terrified or fainting? Speaking of, Kino, who gives a double take and accepts the turtles, but then faints when he sees Splinter. Is a talking rat that much more shocking for a person who's basically indifferent towards giant fighting turtles? I only point this out because David Warner gives a similar dumbfounded shock reaction to seeing Splinter too. While he's fascinated by the turtles, he's seemingly indifferent to Toka and Razor, yet upon seeing Splinter, he's left in shock and disbelief. Is a giant rat really that much more incredible or less likely than mutant turtles who are not even native to New York sewers? Wow, Cambert. Wow, this guy's so many good ones. Mr. Roboto with the music link, Cambert with the reactions, and of course, Taylor Ann Photo just hitting it out of the park 3 different times, and we have the Marvel ones. Guys, I'm going to say this once and for all. It's the first time it's ever happened. You're all champions. You are all the winners. Fister Roboto, Taylor Ann Photo, Cambert, congratulations. You have won this week's Corrections and Omissions. Bam. All right, coming up next, we are going to find out, would Nick Cage be good in this film? We're going to find out what Shear's pick of the week is and get to your Q's and A's. Here we go. Question on the table is, would Nicolas Cage be better in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze? Ooh, wow, okay, that's a good question. I wasn't expecting that question right out of the gate. I guess the question is, who would he play? Splinter? Nah, waste of his time and talent. Turtles? Ditto. Kino? Too old. April O'Neil? Wrong casting. Leads me to go, he could only play David Warner's character, the scientist. I think David Warner's pretty good. I mean, Nick would bring a pathos to it and I think would kill the part. So I'm going to actually take that back and say Nick Cage as the scientist. It wouldn't be a leading role. It would be like a side role. It would be kind of like a thing, something he would do in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. It's more of a classier role. It's a Tom Cruise in Magnolia, if you will, type of role. So as always, I'm a big fan of Nicolas Cage. As always, I believe he'll bring anything up. Do I think he's needed in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2? Not particularly. But if he was in it, would the movie be better? You bet your fucking ass it would be. You bet your fucking shell, man. You bet your fucking keytar. You bet your pizza with your Hawaiian toppings and your pool stick. fighting weapon that is never used as a fighting weapon, that Nick Cage would bring this movie up a notch to its former glory, if you will. All right, it is time now for Paul's pick of the week. All right, here's my pick of the week. A movie called Dope, D-O-P-E, Dope. It is really good. I'm going to describe it as part Boys in the Hood, part Boogie Nights. I don't want to spoil anything for you about it because I think it's that good. It's a little Sundance hit that came out. No one really is in it that you would know, I don't think. You know, there's a couple people that you might recognize, but it's great. You should definitely check it out. I think you're going to really like it. I think you're going to really like Dope. Check it out now in the theaters or check it out when it comes out on VOD, but see it now. Support good small movies. And what I really want to talk about this week is 4DX. 4DX is a moving theater. Think of your movie theater, but as a roller coaster. They have one out here in Los Angeles at the LA Live Theater. The entire rows are like roller coasters. They're moving. I saw Jurassic World. It was awesome. I got wet. There was smoke. There was strobe effects. And like I said, the seats moved. When people got punched, you got punched. Now, I know D-Box is a thing, but this is like D-Box extreme because, again, the smoke, the strobe lights, and the rain. And you get wet a lot. There's a little function to turn off the water. I went with June, and she'd always turn off the water, and I kept on turning it on and dousing her at all points throughout the movie, which was super fun. Also, hey, are you in L.A.? Do you want to see a cool show? 10 years ago, my friend Jake Fogelness and I used to do a show called Talk Show. It's really fun. We had great guests, musical guests. We're bringing it back for one night only at the UCB Theater this month in July, July 18th, I believe, or maybe it's a little bit earlier. Check the schedule. UCB Sunset Theater. Me, Jake Fogelness, Brett Gelman, Rob Hubel, a bunch of special guests. I think you're really going to dig it. Talk Show, UCB, Sunset, LA. Go check it out. Now, let's get to your Q&As. Hit the theme. Q&As are submitted by you on our Facebook page. You leave a question, I give you an answer. Let's go. Cormac T. Riordan writes, fuck, marry, kill. Kurt Russell in drag and Tango and Cash, Schwarzenegger in drag and Junior, Sean Connery in a wedding dress in Zardoz. Wow. That's a great question to start this off. I'm really liking these Q&As this week. Okay. Kurt Russell in drag, clearly the prettiest. Schwarzenegger in drag, not pulling it off. Kill Schwarzenegger in drag. Now it comes down to Sean Connery in a wedding dress in Zardoz. I'm going to bet he's going to be a solid fuck because he's angry, but he just wants to just get it stuck in or stick it in. So that's good. And then marry Kurt Russell because you know what? He makes a pretty attractive woman. And if I have to live with it for the rest of my life, I'm going Kurt Russell all the way. Joe Machovi writes, cornbread's played out. What's the next bread everyone will be talking about? Bro, pumpkin. Pumpkin bread's the shit, right? Put a little delicious thing in there, like a little almond or something. That stuff is good. Pumpkin loaf, pumpkin bread. Get out of here, cornbread. We don't need your shit anymore. Pumpkin's in town. Sergio Solitero writes, should the sequel to Jurassic World take place in a water theme park and be named Jurassic SeaWorld and just be 90 minutes of mosasaurs eating sharks, orcas, and executive assistants? Let me talk about this. I saw Jurassic World, and I have a big issue. That executive assistant was not that bad, but yet we're led to believe that like it's cool when she gets killed. She was on her phone. She was planning a wedding or suspicious of her boyfriend's bachelor party. That's no reason to get killed, all right? Now, that lawyer in the first one, he was kind of a dickhead, okay? He was a jerk. He compromised things. This woman was not that bad. She basically was at Disney World with these two kids, and they were kind of a little bit annoying, and they were always running away. I don't think that executive assistant deserved to die. Colin Trevorrow, I'm calling you out, man. That assistant should have lived a little while longer, or maybe just gotten an arm eaten off. She didn't deserve to die. Oh, my gosh. Also had an issue at the end there, too. Everyone seems so happy. Well, I can't. No spoilers. I can't talk about the spoilers. Okay, sorry, guys. Ed Bauman writes, FedEx, UPS, or USPS? Dude, USPS is the shit. It's cheap, and no one uses it. You just have to brave that line. Oh, I hate that line. UPS is great for Amazon returns. FedEx, man, is expensive. You rich and shit, you use FedEx, but fuck it all for everything else. Grant Stoll writes, personal preference, ooze or slime? I'm a Ghostbuster fan. I'm going to say slime. All right. These are questions that are a little bit more based to me, Jason, or June. Ariel Beth Lipshaw writes, did June find the little man in Mad Max upsetting? He's so small. You know what? She didn't comment on it specifically, but I did bring her to Mad Max, and she was not expecting what Mad Max was about. I don't think she had any idea. She turned to me after the first 2 minutes. She goes, what am I watching? That was after basically a week of begging me to go see it. So if you ever get a chance to see a movie with June, she knows nothing about any movie that she's ever watching and is consistently surprised, shocked, horrified, or pleasantly surprised. It's the best way to see a movie. And she also yells at the screen. Peter Whitney writes, who would win in a fight, Drax or Ant-Man? Well, great. That's a nice segue into my book, Guardians of the Galaxy Team Up 7, which came out this week. It's a Marvel comic. Get it on Comicology. Get it at your local bookstores. They wouldn't fight each other. Big and small. They both have their advantages, right? Ant-Man and Drax would be a battle to the death. That's like Superman and Batman, but I think Superman would clearly beat Batman. Here, I think it's pretty 50-50 because at the end of the day, Ant-Man can just go up inside you and just fucking start cutting cords. Not cords, but like body cords. Yeah, so that's, you know, Ant-Man has a win there. Safe Mo writes, who's your dream? How did this get made guest? Well, that's a great question. You know, I think the question I would like there is you'd want someone who has been through it, who has seen it all, you know, and come out on the other side. I've never really thought about this that much, but I'm going to say my dream guest, and I think you're going to think it's weird when I say it, Keanu Reeves. I think that guy's been in a lot of crazy stuff. And if he just like was very honest, I think we would have the craziest stories, from working with Al Pacino to doing John Wick, talking about the Matrix sequels, to talking about Bill and Ted's. That guy would be the best guest. But he'd have to talk. He couldn't just be like, oh, that was cool. He'd have to like really get in. We'd have to be like over a couple of drinks or kombuches, whatever he's doing nowadays, and we would get into it. Nitty gritty. I think Keanu would have the best stories. All right, that's it, people. Next week, our movie is Runaway, starring Tom Selleck. It's available on Apple, iTunes. You can get it anywhere else, I'm sure, where DVDs and VHS are sold. I want to remind you that we're in San Diego on August 1st. I'm going to be down in San Diego next week for Comic-Con, doing a signing at 5 o'clock on Saturday at the Marvel booth. We got the big talk show coming up in July. Check out the UCB Sunset Calendar. If you're in LA, definitely check out that show. I highly recommend it. It's really, really fun. And pick out Guardians of the Galaxy Team Up number 7. I know it's a lot of information I just gave you guys, but you can handle it. See you next week for Runaway. And just so you know, it probably be delayed. That's the show. A big thank you to Adam Pally, who is just phenomenal. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you certainly can at HDTGM. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HDTGM. Also, if you have a correction and omission that you would like to share with us, just go to earwolf.com, go on the message boards, leave it there. I want to give a big thank you to our good old friend, Avril Halley, who pulls all of our clips. Nate Kiley does all of our research. Leanna Waldron, who just kills it all the time with her graphic design. And if you want to come see us live, we'll be in Largo in Los Angeles in August. Go to largo-la.com, buy your tickets there. And thank you to everybody at Earwolf. Thank you to everybody in New York. Thank you to everyone that I can't remember at Irving Plaza. You guys were fantastic. We love doing our show there. See you next week. Bye-bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.